LSG Media presents Fear the Walking Dead. Yes, we are back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Dean. Joining me is Mr. Matthew Anderson. Together, we are going to be bringing you Fear the Walking Dead, the fourth episode, Not Fade Away. What's going on, Mr. Anderson? How are you today?
I'm good. I'm feeling especially interesting about this episode since I just posted on the LSG Media Facebook page that we are recording this very moment. So you might still be able to have jammed one of your last thoughts into this episode.
Jam it in. Just rough. Slam it in there like the military slamming their faces all over the place in this fucking movie. TV show, movie, whatever.
Whatever. Visual media.
Matthew and I have a couple of manly beers at our sides. I have a Jacko Traveler Pumpkin Shandy, which is what I call white girl drink.
Mm-hmm. Came with Ugg boots.
Came with Ugg boots and something to carve my jack-o'-lantern for the holidays.
Adorable.
Yeah, it's very cute. So yeah, man, I'm pumped about doing this. I've been thinking about this episode a lot and thinking about some of the good and the bad and the ugly and all that shit, and I'm looking forward to talking about it.
Mm-hmm. No, this is, I enjoyed this. This is another, I still feel like the show's generally moving in the right direction.
Yeah, do you think each episode has progressively been better?
You know, I want to say that, but what holds me back from just saying, yeah, it's been better every time. I think in a wider sense, we kind of talked about this at the end of the last episode, in a wider sense, in like where the world is at and how the overall outbreak is progressing, I think it's moving exactly the way I was hoping it would move. And it's very interesting and I'm really enjoying it. As far as characters and the way characters are being introduced and portrayed, that's where I'm starting to be like, there's problems cropping up here and there. Not that I don't think they're insurmountable, but I have my problems more in the smaller details.
Awesome. Well, we're going to get to it because I kind of feel like, is it possible that this was the weakest episode? I'm wondering if it was. Maybe you can help me work through that.
Oh, okay. Therapy.
Let's start with a wonderful opening.
Another one burned last night. Better than TV. People outside the fence, they took the last of them 4 days ago. People just like us, run like cattle, piled into trucks, one suitcase apiece, headed east, at least that's the rumor. Bakersfield, Vegas, who knows?
So.
Rest in peace, Lou Reed. Beautiful music.
Rest in peace, Lou Reed. And, is this Michael Moore, like? Kind of shit going on.
I can't even give him that much credit. I mean, this kid is like, he's gonna, the moment he finishes filming this, he's planning on which AFI lyrics he wants to get tattooed on his ribs.
And don't get it twisted, they'd be on his ribs.
Yeah,
little
ribs are lower, small of his back.
Cute little typeface on the ribs or small of the back.
Adorable. This show, and to be honest, The Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead both have this problem, but I would also say wider television in general has this problem of being super bad at writing realistic teenagers. That shit is very far and few between.
Right. Yeah, the kind of mock, the documentary style from the rooftop. I wrote in my notes, Chris can't be serious. That was my notation. He can't be serious, can he?
Oh, my God. And what sucks about it is that I really liked the opening montage of where everyone else is at and the music. I thought that was really great. But then, like, this, of course, the volume of the music drops. I'm like, wait a minute. And Chris starts talking. I was like, oh, fuck you. Lou Reed's singing. Shut up.
Yeah. Lou Reed's singing. We're getting a big-time Trainspotting homage, as Brian Campbell pointed out.
Yeah.
And it's glorious. And then this fucking kid opens his yapper. And starts with his bullshit.
I could have even accepted a lot of what he said. I'm like, okay, this is kind of our information dump. It's got like an annoying 38-year-old guy's idea of teenage dialogue twist on it, of course. But the line that really like irked me was when he's like, they took the last of them 4 days ago, or they burned the houses or whatever. And he's like, better than TV.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fuck you, dude.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. fucking Where is he? Fucking Calabasas. I don't even know where this fucking kid is. In your nice, cushy place with your fucking 900 channels. It was like, you know what this reminded me of? What the hell was his name? What's the kid's name? Do you remember American Beauty? It's the same shit.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, it's a beautiful fucking bag. Like, knock it off with your fucking bullshit. A bag is beautiful. Fuck you.
Oh, my God.
And I like American Beauty, but sometimes the masturbatory approach to filmmaking makes me want to fucking hang myself.
You know what's beautiful? A Van Gogh painting, because it took work. Fuck you.
Yes, yes. Exactly. You know what's beautiful? My fucking Playboy. Oh! No, I don't know. But, yeah, it was like, I was like, this kid couldn't be any more unlikable than to do this self-indulgent, I'm going to masturbate on the roof with my camera shit.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's just, it's painful. And again, I like where we're at. I like in this, you know, very annoying method of an information dump. I actually really like, you know, oh, 9 days have passed. It's kind of interesting because the show has been. So the first three episodes, like we were saying, are like 10 hours, 12 hours maybe. And it's cool that we've had a nice, you know, break in time and we're seeing how things really are now. And I like that we had that jump forward.
Yeah. I kind of do too, and I also like I like the idea of telling the exposition through this kind of lens. I don't mind that. I just think that, unfortunately, through no fault of Mr. Lorenzo James Herney, the actor who plays Chris Fault of his own, he's just so unlikable at this point. But I will say I sympathize with him a little bit, which is kind of me counter. You know, countering myself, but I'll explain why as we get to it. So
I have to agree with you in that, the sense of like most of my problems with characters aren't with the actors. It's with, you know, what old white guys think teenagers sound like. And they're trying to write it. And it's like, come on, dude. Terrible. Yeah,
absolutely. And then we have the reflection.
Yes.
And that is significant. See, when I first saw that, I was like, oh, someone's alive out there. And I'm like, well, sure. Everyone in California is not dead. So I guess let me ask you a question, Matt. Was I supposed to be surprised and shocked and go, wow, what a revelation when that happened? Because I didn't feel that way.
Yeah, I couldn't, that's an interesting way to frame it, because I couldn't quite tell what the show wanted us to feel. I kind of got the sense that it was like, you know, that this isn't supposed to be happening, that it's like, everybody should have gotten to a place like, or like, it feels like it's implying that, oh, all the people who are still alive have made it to safe zones. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, that's like the way things are now. And the fact that something is still out there maybe makes it impossible to deny how desperate it really is. You can't just hold up and think, oh, we're all safe. We're everybody who's alive still is inside safe zones and we're fine. It's like, no, there are still people out there and it's desperate and it's still bad. But because, yeah, as a shocker, like it doesn't really work as a shocker. Like we know it's bad out there. We know people are out there. Come on, of course.
Right. And then we know that Chris is very excited about this prospect when we come back to him.
Yeah,
but that he's always wanting to rescue people. Like that's Chris's thing, which is exactly how Travis is. Like he takes after his father.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
he has that. Exactly. Like we need to go, man. Fuck.
Right? Gotta help the people, brah.
Right, man. And so yeah, then we get this sort of cut to a close up ticking clock, and I was very much reminded of Battlestar Galactica's episode titled 33. Which the premise of that episode is that they get attacked every 33 minutes and they can't sleep and shit. It's pretty cool. And it just reminded me of it. Anytime there's a close-up ticking clock in a movie, I immediately think of that episode. And it makes me feel tension. But yeah, I was like, okay, close-up ticking clock. And then Travis and Madison kind of meet up. He comes in from his jog. We got this whole everything's fucking hunky-dory. Hey, Chuck. Hey, fucking Tommy. You know?
But I like, you know, that the fact that it kind of looks like a third world country in the sense that, you know, you have occupying troops almost like closing the gates. Like I like that, like I was saying, in the wider sense of the story, I really like that this is how things are playing out, that it's like, OK, there is a modicum of control now. Like, OK, you know, and when we first hear Moyer speak, he's saying, I was like, hey, we are on the, you know, the offensive now. We're getting a handle on this.
Right. And we'll get to that. I actually have a couple things to say about that, too. But let's talk a little bit about this here.
Yeah, you run off to play man of the people with your soldier friends, and I can use a little bit of help.
Stop. Oh, my God, just stop it. This domestic bickering like it's normal, like you're normal people in a normal kitchen. It's not normal. Stop it. Stop acting like it is.
So some maturity is leveled by Alicia. I actually liked Alicia in this moment.
Really?
Yeah.
That is, this might be a first. I feel 100% opposite. I always wanted to backhand her. Shut the fuck, go to your room. Let the adults talk.
You ageist.
As the youngest person on the show.
Right. What I liked about it is that there's a lot of tension going on between Madison and Travis in this whole episode. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I liked that Alicia was like, stop fucking. It's almost like she has to be the grown-up. She's like, stop fighting about dumb shit. Like, we're already in a crisis. We should probably band together and not fucking be fighting about shit. She has this, like, peacemaker way about her. She's trying to cause them to fucking relax. She's like the go-between for Nick later. It's kind of like she's floating around in that role in this family.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I was going to say, in defense of her, the later scene that she has with Nick in the bathroom and stuff, I actually really like. I like that we've seen her really oscillate to the extremes and that we had the episode where she's mopping up Nick's puke and she's like, I hate you. And then we have the scene of her like tenderly, you know, talking to him and hugging him and caring for, you know, his face that got slapped up by old mama. And I like the way her character is going in general. But I also just kind of have like a particular pet peeve with scenes in movies or shows that it's like, the angsty teenager actually bestows wisdom. Maybe she knows more than she. And I'm like, oh, fuck off. They don't actually.
It's tropey as fuck. I'll give you that. Yeah. It certainly is.
And also some of the things where it's like, they're still like, what are they supposed to do? Not discuss or talk about things that they may disagree about just because they're in a crazy situation. Like,
That's a good point. Yeah. I think it's easy for Alicia to just be like, stop fighting. But the enormous responsibility that Travis and Madison must feel for the safety of the family under the circumstances. So, yeah, I can definitely see that side of it, too.
Like, even just the physical, where they're standing and what they're doing in that scene is funny because, like, Travis gets back from the jog and he's getting ready to go out and talk to Moyers, you know, the army lieutenant. Commander in charge of, the lieutenant in charge of everything here. And Madison is still worrying about, like, the arrangements in the house, trying to figure things out. And when the power comes back on, you know, Madison, it looks like she's immediately getting ready to go back to cleaning and doing stuff. And fucking Alicia's just charging her iPhone. So it's like, you are not feeling the weight like the rest of us are feeling. Like, fuck off.
Right. And I think, lucky for Alicia, she can defer responsibility because it's not her job in this particular, you know, circumstance. The hierarchy of this family is not that Alicia's going to call the shots. It's that Madison and Travis are going to call the shots. And Alicia decided to butt in on their argument.
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotcha. But, Ophelia and Alicia head outside, and then we go back to Chris on the roof again. He starts signaling, and then Travis is such a helicopter parent that it's almost painful. Come down on the roof. You're in high school. Like, what? Relax, Dad. Fuck off. I'm not six. I'm not teetering on the edge in my baby shoes. You
the
know?
Only thing I'll give the show is that it is pretty realistic that a mopey teenager would go to the roof of a house.
Right.
Did I do that? Sure. Yeah, okay, I admit it.
Yes, so did I. And, you know, he's just up there doing his thing, but he's so over-the-top possessive. Yeah, helicopter parenting big time. And that comes up again later in the episode, and I was just like, dude, Travis needs to fucking chill. He might need to get some dopamine. He might need to get some morphine or something. I don't know. But he talks about the reflection, and Travis is like, I don't want to hear it. He's very dismissive of Chris because Chris has an overactive imagination, as we later learn. And then he's like, it's just a reflection, dude. Like, stop. Like, dismissing him without even looking, you know?
Yeah.
That's not good.
How he hardly even looks at the camera.
I don't think that's good parenting.
Yeah.
Right. I mean,
helicoptering and dismissing.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird combination of you're infantilizing. I think we used last week that term.
Yeah, that's right.
And then, of course, Nick's in the pool just chilling. And then Madison comes over and is like, hey, what's going on? What do you think of this scene?
Well, I like the whole aspect of Nick being in the pool, especially because I watched this episode twice. And the second time around, it really stuck with me even more of how much it's like it really is. Even when he's being a shithead, he's like a very clever, wily shithead. And I kind of love him for it.
Me too.
The fact that it's like he's lounging in the pool because he has nothing better to do. And he can take the excuse of, oh, I'm just detoxing. But where really it's just a place to keep an eye on next door when he can slip in and slip out.
Yep. The first thing I thought was when he didn't take the pill, it was he's using.
Yeah, right.
I was
yeah.
like, yep, he's using again and kind of playing it off like, no, I'm under control, Mom. It's fine. I'm cool. I'm just chilling in the apocalypse in my pool.
And I'll admit, at first glance, at first stroke of this episode when the scene came up, I was like, you know, maybe he really did kick it and he's just being like cocky and naive about how well he thinks he can, you know, manage himself and that he'll be fine and not have too many side effects. But and then when he's like peering through the fence watching everybody leave, I was like, oh shit, he even pulled the wool over my eyes.
He is very good at manipulating, and this is a junkie trait. Like he's especially when you're dealing with loved ones, he's very good at manipulation because he's like, oh Mom, I thought you'd be happy. Knowing full well he's already taken morphine from this guy. He's already done this. This isn't something he's about to do.
Chris mentions that this is day 9. He was probably hitting up morphine in that guy's house like day 3.
Right. So we know like he's already using. And the fact that he's using and then that betrayal of trust with Mom to then say, oh, I thought you'd be happy is real manipulative.
Oh, yeah.
You know what
I
mean?
It's pretty low.
It's pretty low. But he's a junkie, and that's what junkies do because they're chasing that dragon.
Clever fucking asshole.
Let's get to this guy.
Folks, listen. You are in one of 12 safe zones south of the San Gabriels, okay? So you guys are the lucky ones. You guys, you get to stay in your homes. Ride this thing out, all right? So relax. Count your blessings. Be nice so I don't have to shoot you.
So... this is
Jesus
played
Christ.
By Jamie McShane, who I like, by the way.
Yeah, he's good in this.
Lieutenant Moyers. So this caused a lot of discussion on on social media.
Oh,
obviously,
yeah.
Obviously, Josh, as an ex-Marine, has a certain a certain emotional reaction when he sees the military portrayed a certain way. And I didn't get to talk to him much about this, but I think that that's an interesting stance because I have my own stance on how I feel about like agents of the state and the whole thing, like the military and everything. But one thing I don't lose sight of when I think of my overarching political views on things is that people in the military are simply people like everyone else.
Yes.
I've known people like that anyone. Have gone into the military and they're fucking idiots and they come out and they're just as dumb and they go in for the wrong reasons. And I know people who go in for totally different reasons because they want to serve, they want to help, they want like that, and they're fucking good-hearted people. So I understand that it can be tropey to just make the military this evil machine and all that shit. I tend to fall somewhere in the middle, right? I think there's going to be assholes in the military. That's just the reality. There's going to be savage, bloodthirsty cocksuckers. There's also going to be awesome people, too.
Exactly.
People that want to help, people that are fucking there to do shit and not. And I think that all that shit aside, because that is hours of conversation that I really don't want to get into, is this. I think that Lieutenant Moyes' behavior in this episode is woeful. Like,
yes.
I don't think it's very realistic either. Because here's why. I think that, you know, I was reading up a lot on this. I was reading a lot about military action in the U.S. I did a ton of reading after all these Facebook posts. And I was reading about Hurricane Katrina, and I was reading about all the shit that happened with that.
Yeah.
And that's something you and I have talked about before. Like, what would it be like? Would people leave their posts? Would they this? Would they that? And that caused discussion and controversy. And, you know, I had a couple of people email me, people talk, all this shit. And here's what I will say. Supposedly in Hurricane Katrina, roughly 200 law enforcement people abandoned their jobs.
Wow.
200. That's a fuckload. They just said, fuck this. We're done. There are even some reports, and you got to check your reports. There were even some reports that some participated in looting when things got really bad. They were like, I'm going to look out for me and my own. So we speculated on that early. I was reading some different articles. And again, you always got to go to the source. Some yeah. might say these are bullshit and whatever. Some may say not. But there are some out there that reported this. The reason I was looking into this was because I thought, at what point would the military, the National Guard, I guess in this case, become involved domestically in a situation? Because that's something that occurred with Hurricane Katrina. So I was reading all about it, and I was reading about all these militia laws that they had with the fucking Whiskey Rebellion, and when can a federal force get involved, and when are the local police, blah, 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 blah. And there's always apprehension from getting a military involved in domestic affairs because, according to some of the shit I was reading, was they're not trained to be diplomatic in this sense. That's not their expertise. They're trained to deal with like enemy combatants and all the fallout that comes around with that. And of course, I'm sure Josh would have a ton of input for this, and it's too bad that he's not here to give that. So I don't want to go off the deep end and talk about shit I don't know about because I just read a couple articles, right? That's my experience. But the reason how this gets back to Lieutenant Moyes and the way he's responding is this. A guy like Lieutenant Moyes, who would probably be part of some rapid response team that can deploy in some kind of catastrophic event, i.e. Katrina, right? Yeah. They're trained to handle domestic people, right? You're not dealing with insurgents or possible insurgents and the civilians around those insurgents overseas and with different cultures.
They didn't suck this guy out of, you know, Baghdad and throw him back into this.
You're dealing with cushy, fat Americans. So there's a different approach. And they are trained specifically for that contingency. Yeah. So I think the way he acts, I think the way he says, so I don't have to shoot you. I think dumb shit like that he says is just fucking dumb and he wouldn't say that. I think... Now, I'm not saying that Nick wouldn't have got a butt to the face at the end and they wouldn't have been rough with him. I'm not saying that that wouldn't have happened, right?
Yeah.
I'm not being a fucking shill here.
Yeah, Kent State did not go well.
Right. So we want to be as realistic as possible in the way you portray these people. I want to see a little more depth here. I do want to see Moyes feel pressure and maybe if they would have introduced him with like, I'm going to be diplomatic, I'm going to try to make the people comfortable, and then things get ugly and he turns, that's different, right?
Baby, we're back on 100% agreement again. This is exactly, I was going to say, I'm glad you did the research you did and are talking
not a
about
ton.
This
Listen,
because.
Let me just give a disclaimer right now.
Oh, sure.
I don't
You're not
have,
an expert.
I am not an expert. I read a few different articles. I was actually reading, and it wasn't like a fucking New York Times article. I was reading, and I will find it again, and I will link to it in the show notes. It was like a 30-page thing about, you know, federal power and the problems between presidential command of these troops in Katrina versus the local government and how they were going to deal with law enforcement and the clusterfuck that was Katrina and how ugly it got. And when the police started to abandon their posts because things got real bad, real fucking bad, that all this shit, it was just a lawyer, it was all this, it was a PDF with all these different cited sources going back to the 1800s about militias and federal power and all this bullshit. It was really interesting, believe it or not, although it was dry at times. It wasn't like New York Times just saying the police are killing people, you know, or whatever the fuck. I was trying to get some parity here. I didn't want to be a fucking one-way Johnny. I was trying to see it from both sides. And, you know, I understand there's a lot of emotion involved with people like this, like, you know, the way the military is portrayed. And I know how Josh feels about it. I happen to feel differently because I sometimes think there's a lot of glorification there. I really do think that there's a lot of, like, you know, they're... Believe or not believe in the military dealing with Hollywood and them having like a liaison, but they fucking do. You know, filmmakers go to them and they say, if you want our fucking tanks, here's what we want. We want this to generally be this. We want it to be generally this. We want it to improve the way people feel about us in the military. Like, there's fucking rules if you want to get involved and use their shit. But I'm just saying, make no mistake about it. There's a lot of good portrayal as well as bad portrayal, you know?
For sure. Yeah.
So that's all I'm going to say about that.
And I agree. And I think Moyers is the weakest element of this episode and maybe even of the show so far. And I'm somebody who coming in, you know, with this scene on the scene where we, you know, he's standing in the back of this Humvee and he's giving this speech.
It's awful.
He's talking. Yeah. And it's like part of what he's saying. It's like, you know, I get his point and I actually think he's right in the sense of, hey, we are trying to control things. We are, you know, it is unreasonable to expect the military to just have electricity back on full power, be handing out medication, be handing out clean water perfectly and just good to go, and everybody's gonna be happy. It's like, yeah, this is a horrible situation. The military's here doing the best they can. But adding in that fucking, or else I'll have to shoot you, but like, fuck you. Right. That is it. Stupid. You've lost any and all trust you have gained. Like, no, it's over. That one fucking line is just like, you're a piece of shit.
Right.
Absolutely. And I mean, and like I was saying, like, and like what Josh, you know, even mentioned, he's a fucking caricature. I hate how
he
much
really
of
a, is a caricature.
Just, I'm just a reveling in my privilege of post and don't have to give a shit or answer to anyone and I don't care and I flippantly make terrible decisions and don't give a fuck. Like, I hate that. Like, I was really, what would have been interesting to do with this character is kind of like what you were saying, is have somebody who seemingly at first is really striving to, you know, balance these issues and make the moral choice. But even what I thought would be interesting is to have him, you know, we kind of mentioned it would be cool to see this, and I think this would be the perfect character to have done it this way, is that eventually it gets so bad that he decides to abandon post and is basically going AWOL, and maybe the whole wall situation crumbles and the whole, you know, that the safe zone falls apart because of that, because he's trying to balance these things and he can't, and the situation from outside is exerting more pressure and getting worse, and we see these guys just start to leave, not because they're ordered to leave, but because they individually just do.
Right.
And I think that would have been a more interesting, you know, individual character dynamic to watch, to see why these soldiers leave, which I think, you know, could still happen. But I mean, it just sucks that he has already been made into a fucking cardboard cutout twiddling mustache villain before that could even, you know, be established.
Yeah, it's unfortunate it's unfortunate that they didn't make him more dynamic. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And that's my problem. For sure.
I would imagine Lieutenant Moyes would be like, all right, listen, we're going to come to the tent. We're going to talk. I'm going to tell you what's going on. We got some free med care. Here's what we're going to do. Hey, we got a curfew. Here's why. Do you understand? Like, you know, like, I don't know. I don't know if that's an unrealistic expectation, but
going with his own logic and the reason he talks to Travis and stuff is he's like, well, you know, you have to go talk to this guy for me because we don't want a situation on our hands. And I'm like, well, you are stirring the pot for all sorts of situations to arise because you're acting like, a dictator in a situation where these are the citizens you are supposed to be serving.
Right. And at the end of the fucking, and when he's later chipping golf balls, it's like, it's so bad that he's just worst. So, like you said, flippant. He's so callous. Flippant's the best way to describe him as to what's going on.
I mean, he could have just been like, you know, stomping on a burlap bag full of puppies. Like, ha ha, I'm a fucking bad guy. Right. I'm a piece of shit. And I'm like, get it, dude.
Listen, as we said before, soldiers are people, which means that's good and bad, right?
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And I think they're really missing the boat on the good here, which is, he's acting like no big deal. California is infested with a horrible disease. Like, he's just like, I'm going to chip fucking golf balls. I don't care about that. Obviously, he's not going to sit there and weep. That's not what leaders do. But if you're jogging by and like, look at this fucking moron. He runs this detachment of people and he could give a shit. He's chipping golf balls away. Like, I want you to make us feel secure, you know? Like, what is your fucking mission, dude? What are you doing for us?
That's an aspect of leadership that a lot of people don't think about. It's just the aspect of, like, even if you are taking care of all your priorities and responsibilities and doing really well, you have to also appear that you are doing those responsibilities and taking them well. If you're doing all this great stuff behind the scenes and then in public you look lazy, people think you're a lazy piece of shit all the time. Right. And they think you're not taking their situation and their lives seriously. So same thing. It's like, even if this guy's doing a decent job, to sit outside and whack golf balls into human beings' neighborhoods and homes, like, people were at the edge of that fence probably know people who live in those houses that he's like busting golf balls into the fucking windows of.
Exactly.
And it's like, you don't give a fuck about us. Even if behind the scenes he's doing a great job, doesn't matter. You have destroyed your public image.
Right. It's fucking brutal. And look, and make no mistake about it, like I've already said, soldiers, historically, there are some who've done horrific shit, right?
Yeah,
but
of course.
Can we have a little bit of fucking parody here? Like, can we have a guy who's put in a situation that we think would realistically have been trained to handle the situation and not be so callous about his fucking duties to where, like you said, he's ripping 200-yard golf shots through people's windows of these neighbors, and they're like, well, they're dead. I guess it doesn't matter. Like, and I don't have to shoot you. And why don't you talk them down before we take them down? And the fucking standing on the rah-rah, like, you know, we are the lucky ones. We're on the offensive. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Are you auditioning for Patton? Like, what is this?
Yeah, exactly.
It was just brutal. It was, I rolled my eyes so hard at the scene. I just couldn't even deal with it, you know?
I know.
And look, but I like the clash of the guys with the guns. I like the clash. I like the military and the police clash with the civilians. I like the civil unrest. I like the ugly, but the ugly has to look realistic to me.
Yes.
That's what I'm trying to say.
And ironically, as much as this scene I didn't like for the way it introduced Moyers and, you know, the caricature it made him out to be, it made me like Travis more. I like the way Travis has, you know, very naturally fallen into this role of like the civilian diplomat and civilian leader. I think that's a really cool, you know, aspect to his character now.
Yep, absolutely. So yeah, man, it's a tough situation. It's a tough situation. But anyway, so Ophelia does some a little bit of walking around, doesn't she?
A little bit of getting business done.
Let me go ahead and play a clip for Ophelia.
Hey, baby. You got girlfriend, Vietnam? Not just this minute.
Yeah.
Well, baby, me so horny. Me so horny.
You keep lying.
Me love you long time.
So there you go.
Oh, me love you.
Me so horny.
Oh, really?
Me love you long time.
What else?
Me sucky sucky.
All right, good news.
Oh, damn.
Say that again.
Me sucky sucky.
Half chubbed.
Me so horny.
Okay, I hear you.
Whoa, selling it real hard now.
Yeah. Will you love me long time?
Me love you long time.
Damn, sold.
Well, I will say, unlike the Vietnamese whore, the Viet Cong prostitute in Full Metal Jacket, Ophelia is a smoke show.
Gorgeous.
But yeah, I was looking back. I was watching that clip, you know, grabbing some side bites, and that lady's so gross. She coughs at one point, and it just sounds awful. I'm like, oh man.
Oh God. Never in a million years.
Yep. Are you sure? What about this, though?
Me sucky sucky.
You down with that?
Fine.
All right.
I'll just close my eyes and think of Virginia.
That's for sure a lady boy.
Yikes.
She fooled you, or he fooled you. Joke's on you. He just did a little tuck and suck, and you fell for it.
Boom. A little scotch tape fooled everybody.
Yep, that's it. So, yeah. Ophelia cruising around.
Fucking Michael Bay's Pearl Harbor scene. Oh. We're just missing the parachutes.
Right. And then, of course, the lieutenant, we already talked about that, that this guy Doug won't take his meds.
Yeah, and I know. The saddest Zach Galifianakis there ever was.
Hey, buddy, where are you and your family? Hey. He's just sitting on the tub like a frump with his belly and his beard.
I know. Yeah. Oh, but Travis is a good man. We get that.
Yep. And Doug is off the fucking deep end. And he's like, listen, go out there and tell your kids it's going to be okay. And will they know that I'm lying?
even if they know, they still want to hear it.
This is an example of how the accoutrements of modern society has carried along an individual like Doug who didn't get killed by the lions or a neighboring tribe.
Didn't get his head bashed in by a rival monkey in 2001 over the water hole.
He was the monkey that didn't get a chance to touch the monolith.
Will they know I'm lying? It won't matter when the side of your head is caved in with a donkey's jawbone.
That's right. And then, Alicia, what's with Alicia's skirt? Yeah.
When she goes over to see the most depressing scene in the world at her dead neighbor's house.
Tran's house? Yeah.
Oh, yikes.
Suicide now, thinks of Matt, decides to start cutting herself, or shaving herself a tattoo. I can't tell.
She was, to give her credit, she was giving herself a tattoo, which is not much credit because that thing's going to look like a horrible prison tattoo.
Yeah, basically.
Ugh. But I mean, I actually really, really like that note, she finds that note and we get that, you know, that scene and that it reoccurs later. I like that. I like the motif because That is the power of what Fear the Walking Dead can offer us that the Walking Dead can't, is that we can really kind of get into those emotional backstories of people right when this is going bad and right when they don't understand it at all. Because she, you know, through that note, she has this like revelations apocalypse, you know, religious apocalypse style way of viewing things. And I'm sure that becomes pretty common. I would, you know, another thing that kind of leads me to a thing I'm hoping for about this show, I want to see some fucking end of the world cults going nuts in this and having influence and starting survivor groups.
That'd be awesome.
Oh, that's the stuff.
I like it. Let's talk about a character that that got some screen time this week in Liza.
That's right. Yeah, this was probably her, you know, best episode so far. We got to actually really look at her and see her not only interacting with characters, but a new character. And she's our, you know, our liaison to that character, essentially.
Dr. Exner.
Yes.
Yeah, so Liza's helping the neighbor. Is that dialysis? I'm pretty sure it is, right? That.
I would not know. I should. Because I'm on it, but no, I'm just kidding.
Holy shit. You might want to stop with the alcohol, pal.
Ah, you're not my fucking mother.
Nice. Everything's fine, Mom. I'm just going to back float in this pool.
Oh, shit, yeah. I already kicked it. Aren't you happy?
Yeah. Gee, Mom, thought you'd be happy. So, yeah.
But yeah, she's just got him on a straight bag of morphine right there. Just that thick white stuff.
Little drip. Little
that
drip,
is drip. Heavy duty shit, yeah.
And then, of course, when Liza leaves the house, Nick climbs out of the pool. He does a little creeping. And then we see Chris showing Madison the footage of the reflection right after that.
That's right. And she, at first, is fairly dismissive as well. Mm-hmm. You know, saying, it's probably nothing. Maybe it's a dangling piece of glass or metal or something
out there.
That's
what I thought. Yeah, that's a reasonable conclusion.
Yeah, there was a part I really thought at first that this episode was going to lead us to when Madison leaves and goes out there, that she was going to get stuck out there, get there and realize it really was just like a dangling piece of glass. And now she's stuck in the fucking danger zone.
I was kind of hoping that was going to be the case.
Ooh, be some, that is a nihilistic way to end the episode, but I kind of dig it.
So we go back to Dialysis Man. His name is Hector, by the way, and he's got his little vampire friend.
Ugh.
Underneath the bed, this little piggy went to market and bought some fucking morphine between his little piggies.
Between his little piggies. And for whatever reason, somebody, one of our listeners, will know what I'm talking about and will let us know. But there is a movie where Matt Damon, as a young Matt Damon, played
Courage
a
Under
heroin
Fire.
Addict. What is it?
Courage Under Fire.
Holy shit, you know it.
Come
Perfect.
On, son. Say fucking amateur hour.
That's right. You have a telepathic connection with everybody from Boston. I forgot.
Nice.
But yeah. He describes in detail in that movie about how he sticks the needles between his toes. And I was like, oh, that guy, that would just be awful to see. And then this show manifested it.
And his doctor told Matt Damon in that film, if you do that again, you're going to die. Because he cut a shitload of weight.
Damn.
Didn't eat for a long time. Fucked him up pretty bad.
Wow. Wait, the character or Matt Damon?
Matt Damon. To play
Holy
the heroin.
Shit.
Yeah, because he was a heroin addict. He's super thin in that movie.
Yeah.
If you go back and look at images of him in that. But you know what I say? I think he's a fucking wicked good actor, okay?
he's one of the locals.
Tell that doctor to go fuck himself, huh? Did he go to Harvard? So anyway, let's get over to Ophelia trying to get some meds. Speaking of getting some meds, she's using her strengths while Nick uses his strengths. And her strengths are apparent in the way she looks.
Liza?
Ophelia, you meant. Oh, did I say Eliza? Sorry. Bunch of swinging dicks looking for some action.
God, that dumb. He looks like the most white bread hick mountain freckled boy there ever was. Never seen an exotic beauty like this before.
This fucking guy was like, look, I ain't got any fucking prospects.
Not a one.
I was bad in high school. My fucking dad was in the army. He's a good shit. I'll fucking, you know, fucking join up. Never got laid yet. Gets through basic. Gets out there. And this fucking girl walks up to him. You can tell he's like so like enamored and starstruck with her. It's pretty cute, actually.
It is. It's kind of adorable.
It's kind of adorable in a weird way. And you don't really see this that often in these shows, is that kind of, oh, I think you're cute and adorable. Everyone's so hardened. But that's what's cool about slow rolling the fall of society, is you get these kind of moments you wouldn't otherwise have.
Yeah. No, nothing, not even the zombie apocalypse will stop the biological impulse for boning. I do believe that. That will never change.
This guy was like, God, when I'm fucking, once I'm done, once I'm out of basic, once I'm a fucking National Guardsman, I'm going to be swimming in pussy.
And now he's jacked like, in the gym.
Now he's like fucking vindicated. He's like, see, you fucking idiots, I told you.
That's right.
So anyway, she needs medicine. It becomes apparent she's using him. And then I kind of felt bad for him.
I know.
A little bit.
Although I don't think he would care either way. Even if he was like, ah, she's just using me for the medicine. Whatever, fine.
He's like, it's just a little medicine. It's not like the fucking, it's not like I'm giving her access to the weapons locker, right?
Exactly. Yeah, come on, Carol, we can't have that.
Right. So, and then of course, Travis and Madison.
Me so horny.
Yeah.
Ah, yes.
They hop to it in the garage.
Good sweaty car sex.
That
damn
is some high school shit.
Yeah. Keeping the spice in their life.
That's right. And yeah, man, that's it's good shit. So let's talk a little bit about after the boning, their annoyance with each other continues.
Well, for exchanging parenting tips, you might want to pay more attention to Chris.
Oh, okay. I mean, all I do all day is pay attention.
Positive attention.
That is one of those, I'm sure, it's that's a situation that only somebody who's been divorced and has children and is now with somebody else can really get a feel of. Because that is a tough thing. It's not like, oh, hey, that's my child as well, and we have to discuss how we want to handle it. It's like she's saying, oh, you want to exchange some parenting tips because you don't really get to completely talk about my kids, and I don't really get to completely talk about yours. And that's already, like, a situation that's, like, standing on thin ice.
Right, absolutely. And then, yeah, they kind of, that's, they talk a little bit about that, and then they get on, they later, they then discuss, Madison's talking about the quarantine camps and all of that stuff, right? Isn't she saying something like this?
What am I supposed to do with that? Go to Moyers and say, what, my kids saw a light, so your soldiers, tell them to drop their duties. And
that is their duty. It's 9 days. What have they done? They promised medicine, doctors, electricity, information. Where is it? What about the phones? Don't you wonder why they can't get a landline?
No, I don't wonder. Maybe they got something bigger to worry about.
Well, maybe they don't want the phones to work.
Now, this is something I can understand. As much as I thought that there's some silly portrayals of their presence, this withholding information shit, because they probably, to be honest with you, a unit this size probably doesn't have all the answers either. So they're probably they probably only know a little bit more than the fucking people they're watching over. And I like that. I like that paranoia. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, I like this. This whole scene and this whole dialogue is interesting, and it's understandable for me on both sides. Like, I get Travis's point of, like, you know, he's basically just making the point of, hey, this is really bad national scale. There, yeah, it is a little unreasonable to expect these things to be handled, but it's also not an unthinkable idea that they would be maybe controlling some information, hiding things, and just in the sense, just out of the fear that this information will incite them to further problems, the population here.
Especially since they don't even have all the answers yet.
Exactly.
Know? They're not
everybody,
sure.
That's the thing. Like, in situations like this, it's interesting because it's like even the authority figures, even the people in the know, are fairly in the dark. And that's something else we know from The Walking Dead, that, you know, the fucking CDC in the headquarters of it in Atlanta, they still essentially had no idea what was going on.
Yep.
All the way even up to the last, you know, before it was blown up.
We do see that Travis is sort of like, he's kind of almost the polar opposite of like me in his attitude, which is like, oh no, everything's going to be fine. They're going to get it working. Boom, the power comes on. He's like, see, nothing to worry about. They're going to take care of us. They're going to give us medicine. They're going to do that. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. They're going to help us. They're going to suck our dicks, you know, right?
Me sucky sucky.
He's just like, don't worry. They're going to take care of you. The state loves you. They're going to send the fucking... Everything you ever wanted is going to come protect you. Like, he's really on board with that. He's not worried like everyone else is worried. And Madison is like somewhere off that. She's the opposite direction of that scale. Like, what about this? What about that? What about this? What about that? She has questions. She has concerns. Mm-hmm. And he's like, it's going to be fine. Just fucking relax, you know? So I do like that dynamic between the two.
I do, yeah. And I think Josh pointed this out in his comment as well. I read a bunch of them, but I can't remember them all. But it is a kind of a strange thing about Madison's character, how quickly she goes from being dismissive like Travis of the, you know, of what Chris showed her, to being kind of a fucking Alex Jones style paranoid. Like, hey, no, fuck him. Fuck, they're all probably lying and we need to go out and handle this ourselves and this and that. It's a little bit of a hard shift, but I guess I can chalk that up to her being a person who feels more, I don't know, direct pressure than Travis. Like, she's more worried about the idea of getting medicine in time for the sake of her son and different things like that. Like, she has a little more, I don't know, personal, emotional skin in the game, I would say.
I think they are emotionally almost, you could argue that she's almost emotionally compromised in that she really has to, not fully, but I'm saying she's she's teetering. You have a son who is a junkie, and now you have these authority figures kind of walking around with firearms. They're already nervous in general about their
curfew,
presence.
There's a
curfew. There's rules. These people are telling you how to live. That's stressful, right?
Exactly.
And on top of it, you need to be worried that your son is going to do something fucking dumb and get mixed up with these people and get fucking incarcerated. Who the fuck knows what could happen? Shot. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah, be on the wrong end of a gun.
You don't want to be... So you're constantly worried about him, and the stakes are so high now with the tension in the air. Mm-hmm. And that's tough, man. That's a tough spot for Madison to be in. So her making irrational decisions at times doesn't bother me too much, I guess.
Yeah, and I think it's a little unfair to go too far with the idea of thinking of them as like a bifurcated family where there's Travis's side and Madison's side, because I think, you know, she very much still cares about Chris and Liza, and I think he still very much cares about Alicia and Nick and everything. It's not like they don't give a shit just because they're not blood. But I do think there is some credence to the fact that when it comes to Travis's side of things, they seem a little more, I don't know, safe, bounded in this at this point.
You
know,
I agree.
He knows where Chris is. He knows where Liza is. Things are a little more safe. And I think things are a little more unstable for Madison in her eyes. And the fact that this is her house that everybody is, you know, the Salazars are staying in and all this stuff is happening to her own home. And she still has to worry about her son. I think I can buy her being a little more like emotionally tumultuous because of that.
Sure. I gotcha. And then we have Travis. We have Travis going to look for Doug because Travis's wife comes by. He took his car. You know, we aren't even allowed to drive.
And they're all still fucking geared up for SARS. Like bio suits on, the gloves. And I don't blame them for that caution. I definitely don't.
Hell no. I'd be wearing a mask for sure.
I know. I'm kind of like, you know, you guys, I know they don't actually, because we as the viewers understand, like, hey, you're already infected because you're alive and that's that. But I'm still like, you guys don't fucking know. You should be more cautious.
Definitely. And then, of course, Madison plays a little Morse code with the DMZ, right? With the people out there and the flashing light. And then Travis just finds a car, but no Doug. We hear some coyotes howling, which is cool. And then, of course, is where we get the LT driving his golf balls. He talks about that guy's a head case. Another bad dialogue. And he's like, can't have that around camp. And then the LT, Moyes, right, is like, well, I wasn't going to tell his wife. I'm not a social worker. Really? Then why were you put in this position? That's another fucking stupid thing. Obviously, yes, you're not a social worker. I get it. But you kind of have to be sensitive to the situation if you don't want people to just revolt and rush you guys, right? You can't.
Yeah.
You got to fucking, don't be a dick, man. Like, have some modicum of sympathy for the situation these people find themselves in. Do you know what I'm saying?
Exactly. And I think, I mean, that's, and I mean, people, I'm sure, I wish we could talk to, you know, it's like, I'm sure people in this situation, like in Iraq, it's like there is a difference when you're in a war and you're fighting and you're moving through an area versus being in a war and you're fighting and you are now staying and sitting and interacting with the citizens of this area.
For
and you
sure.
might be there for years. Like, that becomes a different operation.
Right.
That becomes very much, yeah, you have to, there has to be a diplomatic aspect to this. And that's been a huge part of, you know, the Iraq and Afghan wars, that we are occupiers and we are in the daily lives of normal people.
Right.
And yeah, you can't just shoot like, well, I don't do that. I just shoot people, whatever. I don't even think about it. Like, no, you don't have a choice, man. That's the name of this game.
Right. Absolutely. And it's a fucking obnoxious mess. It's a very unique situation. It is unlike anything anyone's ever experienced because it's make-believe TV, right? So the zombie apocalypse is a new threat.
And but we're seeing, why can't they look at the history books for the zombie apocalypse of 1968 and get it this fucking right?
There you go. But then, of course, we have Liza goes to Cynthia and Hector's house. No, Hector. And this is where we meet Exner.
Mm.
Talk to me.
That's right. Ah, she comes on in. And I actually really like, how she... there's that tension in the air because Liza's like, oh, shit, I am not certified to be doing anything I'm doing, handling the drugs I'm handling, nothing. But I really like that twist and that air of desperation of, you know, the doctor being like, look, can you pretend a little longer? Like,
right.
Anybody who knows anything, regardless of how or why they know it, is, you know, has become valuable.
And that's just... you know, that's just fucking certifications and, you know, fucking degrees and all that nonsense. Like, that's
like she's proved it. She's already, you know, right. She kept a person alive and she's administered a drug, you know, properly, at least properly enough to not kill him dead from it.
And that's
so, she knows, you know, actionable knowledge.
Right. And that's all that matters is fucking results, right?
Yeah. At the end of the day.
I tell people this shit all the time. Like, I'm always like, I want to get this certification and because it'll make me better at my job. I'm like, well, how are you doing now? Is it going to change your pay? Is it going to be worth the money? Because at the end of the day, your fucking company wants results, dude. Like, are you providing those results? You know, and this is kind of an extreme form of that where she's like, I don't care if you do or don't. You clearly know what you're doing. So you're now an asset and we need you because you've got a lot of fucked up people. Would you be willing to come?
Total opposite of Moyers. She's just been somebody who, regardless of her ability, regardless of how high her ability is, she's been able to build trust. Because she makes that, the doctor makes that point of like, I've been to three people today who call you the reason they're alive.
That's right.
Whether how true that is or not doesn't really matter. They're believing it.
That's right. So yeah, this is interesting, these moments, because in this situation where you're confined to a zone, there's only going to be so many people with medical expertise, and they become very valuable assets.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I mean, I wonder how you feel about the character, because I do really like Liza at this point. I feel like she's a character who, of all of them, really is just doing her best and trying to carry her weight, and not really, there's not much I can fault her for, really. She was kind of dragged into the situation as far as being, you know, in proximity to Travis and Madison.
I think Eliza is very important to the group's survival at this point in the episode. The end, her actions at the end left kind of a bad taste in my mouth, but I'll get to that. I kind of feel like I think that Liza is important because she can maintain the health of the group, and that's a huge asset when people are getting wounded and shit. You need somebody to be able to do that, or you're Foxville, right?
Yeah.
I also know that based on the last episode and the 7 years and the coulda, woulda, shoulda, that this matters to her. That there's an emotional pulling here beyond she wants to help people. There's a now's my chance to do what I always was supposed to do that I never finished doing.
Yeah, right?
That's true. That came back from the old episode, which of course now she has that opportunity to do the thing she always thought she should have done but didn't for whatever fucking reason.
Yeah, I think so.
So Madison sneaks out with her bolt cutters.
And which she evidently cuts the fence and then drops the bolt cutters on the ground on the other side of the fence, goes in completely empty handed, which I was like, what the hell are you thinking?
Right.
Again, have to emphasize of anybody in the house of people who are there right now, she has had more encounters and dealt with more shit with actual zombies than anyone, and she goes out empty-handed. That is bonkers.
And she sees lots of terrible things. Bodies, biblical passages scrawled out, what I like to call the 28 days later wall, right?
Yeah.
Very cool music.
Everybody's missing, the dog, the cat, my kids, all of it.
Yep. They finally did something that you and I have discussed, why don't they do this more often, and that's they address the smell of bodies.
Ah, indeed. Oh, man.
I like that a lot. I liked her immediate whoa.
Oof,
right?
Yeah.
That.
And there was even some accuracy in just the fact that, you know, these bodies are just like out in the open sun. And even that guy she comes across, like it looks like he's almost like levitating off the ground a little bit. But that's definitely just like he is full of corpse gas at this point and reeking. And it is probably, you know, like she does. Those guys are probably wearing gas masks both to, we got to, you know, not get infected. And let's not all be vomiting from the smell of all these corpses.
Yeah, I wonder if it does. I wonder if it gets rid of the scent in the air. I don't know how that works.
I don't know.
I'd like to know the answer to that.
But he was hoping.
She gets out there, sees the people dead. She sees a pistol just waiting to be scooped up, and she leaves it there, just waiting.
Oh, my God. Yes, I almost spit beer all into my microphone, but it's 100% agree. I was like, what? Just pick it up. It's there. Just do it.
Take it back to somebody who will actually use it. Give it to Danny.
Take it to Daniel so he knows what to fucking do.
Yeah, funny. Danny in both both this and Predator 2 is name.
Holy
right?
Shit.
Danny
You're
boy.
Right.
Danny boy.
Oh my. I wonder if that's in his contract.
It's Daniel.
I would only play characters who are named Danny.
I won't be called.
I love the name Danny. I love Danny Glover. I want to be him. I smell his underwear on this set of Predator 2.
God, he doesn't deserve that treatment. I shouldn't. He is a better man than that joke.
Daniel Archuleta and Daniel Salazar. So there you go.
Son of a bitch. Mm-hmm. Oh, Danny boy.
Wrong Daniel. So Madison hears the patrol, which is cool. And I love the image of the troops standing at the crest of the hill. It just looks cool, man. And those masks and shit, they're scary.
Though, yeah, and I love how it shows us that gear. It shows us those masks and, you know, very unfamiliar alien-looking military gear. And it does not explain, you know, we don't see them using it or explaining the purpose at all. Like, they are, it adds that, like, truly, you know, scary mystery to them of, like, what are these particular soldiers doing?
Very
like,
cool.
They have a very specific job, for sure.
Yep. And then I like that a lot. I like how we hear their breathing, too. The like, in the mass, you can hear that breath, and you can hear the radio chatter as they go by.
Yeah.
It's just cool, man. It's just a cool way to shoot that. I like
it. It's all good. And one thing I was going to ask your opinion on this real quick. When Madison comes back, and she's talking to Daniel, and when she talks to someone, another character again later on, but she's mentioning how, she noticed that people who were not infected were killed. And I still, even on a second viewing, I'm like, how could you tell again who was infected and not infected when they were killed? Were she seeing bodies that didn't have bullets in their head?
Yes.
Is that what it was? Did I just miss that? Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe then. I don't know.
Right.
But even that doesn't make sense because they would have gotten up and walked around. Right?
Yes.
What the fuck?
Right. That's what I was wondering too. Because if you shoot them and kill them, they then become zombies if you don't shoot them in the head.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Well, so that's that. I wipe my hands of this show. I am done. This was a good run. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I didn't understand that either. And maybe somebody
I was like, how are you so... She was so confidently sure of that. And I was like, I couldn't tell.
Yeah, but that seems crazy to me. Because then what you're saying is, what you're saying is that these guys went into these neighborhoods and just executed everyone?
Yeah.
Is that what they're trying to lead us to believe? That bot, right?
Again, and I'm sure we're going to get to it with our listener comments, but I think there's... We only have a handful of flashback scenes to the outbreak in The Walking Dead, especially, you know, the most important being of Shane at the hospital where Rick was still asleep. But we definitely did get some evidence of SWAT teams and troops just executing people, which I'm assuming they must have just gotten orders in the sense of, like...
Containment.
Everyone in this area is considered contaminated and infected, and you execute them. Anybody moving needs to go down.
Right. Yeah, that's what I would imagine, too. So I'm wondering, is that something that occurred here? But that doesn't make sense because, like you said, not all of them have head wounds, right?
Yeah, yeah. I swear I saw some that didn't.
So I don't know. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. Maybe we missed that. I don't know. Maybe somebody will write into the show and correct us on that. But I'm wondering what's going on with these people outside here.
Yeah. What is Madison's methodology for understanding why they were killing people who are not infected? How could she tell?
Right. So then we go back to Liza and the doctor, and they meet the Salazars, and this is kind of cool, you know. Liza's doing the rounds, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they go, and Danny isn't sure. He's like, is it a military facility? Okay. The doctor maintains her pleasant exterior, and then the Salazars aren't sure. Miss Salazar's really visibly upset. She cries, and then...
She's very annoyed at being treated like a fucking child by the doctor as well.
she's a, you know, a grown fucking woman, raised a family and shit, you know. She's like, this sucks. You know, I feel useless. I don't want to be separated from my family. I love my family. I'm emotional. Like,
and the doctor's both speaking English and whispering it as if, and she's like, why is she whispering like I'm a fucking child?
Right,
like,
right.
I can understand that and like, fuck you. I can determine my own, you know, fate.
Yep. And I like how Danny's like, well, I'm going to go with her. And I like that a lot. And then, of course, Liza and the doc, Exner, go to see Nick. And I was like, what the fuck? Did you rat him out?
Yeah.
She did. That's a bad move, man.
Was it Liza who did, you think?
Yeah.
It must have been. Yeah,
because
he
does say your ex-wife is a narc when Travis comes over.
Oh, well, does he say... Yeah, I guess he does. You're right.
He does.
For a while there, I was thinking your wife, I thought he meant he was saying Madison, as if Madison maybe reported him in the sense of she was trying to get medication for him or something. But no, yeah, you're actually 100% right. I totally missed that.
Yep. So she, you know, and that's the fault of, that's what's happened here. Like Exner's trying to get the skinny on what's going on here and what's happening. And unfortunately, the higher ups, the brass and the politicians, they're like, listen, we, the commanders of Moyes are saying shit like, well, if they are a possible problem, they need to be brought in and held because we don't want this fucking up the order that we have here, right? They're making this kind of unilateral sort of martial law decision like, well, he's a junkie. That means he's a problem. We want him to go away.
You know, which actually also leads me to two ideas, which makes me wonder if, for one, they are just addressing it in the sense of any, you know, and we kind of mentioned this already, like any destabilizing element at all, remove it. We cannot have any extra problems in this already massive problem at all.
Right.
Or if they actually, if the military already does have knowledge that any person at all, when they die, will come back as a zombie. And they're like, anybody who's a fucking junkie who could overdose and die in the night in somebody's house, not happening. Anything that could cause, you know, anybody, you know, like the reason they take Hector, it's like somebody who could just die of their, you know, particular liver disease or insulin if they're a diabetic. Anything that could just kill somebody, we have to have them out of there. Like only healthy people can be monitored. Maybe they know that, or maybe they don't. It's kind of a weird mystery at this point.
I think that's probably a really good observation.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. And then I like when she's talking, when Exner's examining him, and he's like,
you're a very attractive woman.
I fucking love that part. It's so good.
That's the thing. Once again, I'm like, man, I kind of was like, oh, another heroin Johnny Depp junkie lookalike in the beginning of the show, but I'm like, it's kind of my boy at this point. I don't dig him. What a beautiful cover-up for her suspicion. That's great.
It's awesome. I really like Nick a lot. He's a good character.
I do.
Obviously, this hospital is going to be significant. But before we start talking about that, Alicia gives herself, finishes her little tattoo thing. And then, of course, we have Danny and Madison. Danny basically just asks Madison about her adventures. You know, he's like, what the fuck were you doing out there, you crazy bitch? And then
what did you see?
And then he tells his tale.
These men were from the government. They came to our town and they took some people away. And my father was someone of certain importance in the community, so he went to speak to the captain and ask when will they return. And the captain told my father, Miguel, don't worry. They always come home. And they did. I was standing in the river, fishing, just a boy, and I found them. All of them, all at once, all around me, in the water.
So I guess Danny has a different perspective than Travis on how things go when the government gets involved.
a little bit of a real world experience there.
Great googly moogly.
Yikes.
That is a dark, dark tale.
yeah. And that's a great scene. And I think fucking Ruben Blades is a really good actor after that. I mean, this is a really nice, well-delivered piece of dialogue.
That's right. And then he follows it up with this really cool piece.
He said that men do these things not because of evil. They do evil because of fear. And at that moment, I realized my father is a fool for believing there was a difference.
And I gotta say about that little piece of dialogue there, because I have a lot to say about that little piece of dialogue. Actually, I totally understand his point. I totally see it. But I agree with his father. Philosophically, morally, I 100% agree with his father. But again, I get what he's saying.
Right.
I wonder what your take is.
Me?
Yeah.
So you're talking about... So pose the question to me, and I will tell you.
Oh, okay. All right, I will pose the question. Is there evil? Can someone be composed of evil, inherently evil? All of their actions animated by the force of evil? Or is evil just the result of terrible actions and terrible choices made out of fear and greed and awful influencing factors?
I don't know.
Ah, okay, well.
Do you like that answer?
Good, weak-ass answer. Loved it.
Yeah, I don't know if...
That's a good point.
There's people... If I say evil doesn't exist, people will send me 900,000 examples of why it does. Right? Yeah. I think... That's a very challenging moral claim for me. I think that people do things, and some people think those things are fucked, and some people think those things are not fucked. And I don't really know where one draws the line. If you want to bring faith and religion into it, then I think if you're somebody who is a very religious person, say a Catholic, Christian, whatever the fuck, I think that you completely believe evil if you're going by your book, because it's obviously that there's evil creatures in the book, right?
Yes.
The Bible, as I'm saying. I'm not trying to belittle it. I'm being serious. There's very clear evil discussed in a religious standpoint, which is purely exists for this purpose. I don't know how that relates to the nature of man or men or whatever. I don't think it's all strictly motivated by fear.
Yeah.
I think fear is a big fucking factor in the way people conduct their lives, though. Because I think it's a really intense philosophical discussion about the moral of man and what is evil and what is not evil. Because it depends on who you fucking ask, right?
And I gotta say, I obviously won't get into the philosophical thick of it for hours, but I think for me, it's very important. I think that for me, I'll just say from my personal viewpoint, my opinion, there is no such thing as evil as a thing, as a force, evil. I think people can do really terrible things and commit evil actions, but that people are not evil. And for one, I think it's very important to think that way, because to believe in evil as just a force that can just be, and people can be born that way irreversibly, and they just are, it excuses the actions of the Nazis very easily. We can just say, oh, well, they were evil, so yeah, they did evil things. Whereas you think the other side of, they were normal human beings just like me or you, and they got caught up in manipulation and lies and their own personal faults all whirled into one big mixture that ended up influencing them to do the worst things human beings can do. And that's the danger I think we really have to remember and keep in mind for ourselves, because it means any of us are capable, as human beings, are capable of doing those things. Not that we ever will, but we always have the capacity. And to believe in evil says, oh no, some people would never, ever, ever in a million years ever even have the capacity to do that because they're good. But that person would because they're evil, which is, I don't think is true. I think anybody has the capacity, and you have to constantly fight to balance that.
That's my take. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy because it's just labeling. I mean, it's like good and evil is a construct of language that's just used to say, well, this person's evil, which means a certain thing, right? Mm-hmm. I think that it's a real deep philosophical I think it's its own fucking podcast, to be honest with you.
Like, for sure.
People have philosophers debate the very nature of good and evil all the time. And some people feel evil is real. Some people feel evil is not real. And I think it's dicey, man. I don't know if I'm qualified to give an answer. I'm not trying to play it safe. I tend to lean more towards your direction. Do you know what I'm saying?
It's something I feel strongly about. So I'm okay with making my strident stand, and I'm sure people might disagree with me, and that's fine. I'm sure they have a good reason to.
Yeah, that's all right. I tend to agree with your stance on the fact that it's purely just a linguistic representation to talk about that which we can categorize and label, because that's what we do as people. Do you know what I mean?
And on that note, that's why I was also saying I understand Daniel's point of, on as far as actionable, you know, measures to take, boots on the ground, there isn't much of a difference. Like, when somebody does something terrible, I'm okay with you, you know, avenging it or fighting back or being as offensive or, you know, defensive as you need to be. You know, it's like, oh, well, you know, you're a pacifist because of that. No, like, yeah, I agree with Daniel's fucking hit him where it hurts, you know, fight hard back aspect.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, and it's, as we sit here and talk about it, evil is almost like a moral condemnation, right? It's like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, it is, some would say, well, the fucking people who dropped an atomic bomb on our city are evil. And there's other people who say, those people aren't evil. This was the situation, right? So that's kind of like, you start getting into that shit. You start getting into that whole, like, wacky perspective and the whole philosophy of all that shit, which is crazy. But if you throw God into the mix, then your religious people can tell you evil of course exists, you dummies. If you get more secular in your approach, you can start to have a pretty good discussion about it, and I tend towards the latter.
Yeah.
So there you have it. I like it, kid.
There you go.
So anyway, he then tasks her with Ophelia.
Jesus. That's right.
He's like, hey, you're going to look out for Ophelia. And Madison has the reaction that I do, which is like, she's a grown-up. What are you talking about?
Yes. She's not like 14.
No. Do you remember this girl?
Me so horny.
Yeah, she's fine. She knows what she's doing.
She knows how to sling it and bring it, for sure.
Right on.
She can handle herself.
So anyway, yeah, I don't know. It's pretty crazy. So anyway, Nick looks all over the house for some more morphine, and he gets the shit smacked out of him by Mama. She is pissed.
Damn, yeah. And I really like that scene. And
it's a great scene.
I don't blame her for a single fucking slap.
Jessica said the same thing.
Oh, also, this is a good time. Speaking of Miss Jessica Vizina, she is the only person so far who commented on our first live, hey, we're recording right now post.
Oh, did she? She's such a dork.
I know, she's such a dork, Jessica.
What'd she say? No,
she said, just to get in her last thought, is Chris the worst character on TV? He is obviously the worst character on this show. My power rankings go, first, Nick. Next, everyone else. Last, Chris.
Awesome. Nick, everyone else, Chris. I think that's a really good way to put it.
Jessica Vizina, only person commenting, keeping it in the family. Come on, everybody. Where are you?
Awesome. They're like, we're sleeping. It's midnight on the East Coast.
Come on,
fuck
dummies. Yeah.
So anyway, dejected Nick sitting in the corner after getting just an ass. Just a real ass whooping.
You have no idea. You have no idea. Beating the shit.
Yes, beating to shit. Then we get Alicia wanting to see Nick, but Nick's mad. And then, of course, helicopter parent. Oh, what's going on? I can't let these two interact without fucking getting involved. Fucking sit down, son.
Man, just tuck your shirt over your abdomen tattoos and take a seat.
I like his vulnerability with her when he cries. Guilt associated with that falling off the wagon is awesome.
Yeah, no, that is awesome. Nick's character and his problems are handled really well in the show so far. I really do like him.
Very cool. And then, of course, Madison dealing with her own shame and regret, and then we get this little fallout with the military.
it, It doesn't really show it, but I'm. She's just drinking straight whiskey out of that coffee
mug.
I think so. Just slinging it back.
Real classy. Her fucking Alabama wine glass.
She's my fucking hero in that scene.
And then, of course, the U.S. military shows up. Free medical care. Like fucking the stupid shit they say is so ridiculous. Avon.
I do like that. Come on, man. Free medical care. We'll fucking cut your toenails. We'll do whatever, man. It's the U.S. military.
Yeah. Fucking Private Snowflake over here will jerk you off. Get in the truck. That's so weird.
It is a weird scene. Yeah.
It's really weird.
And again, I like that brotherly, you know, sibling connection where Alicia looks to him and she's the one who's like, fucking run. They are so onto your ass.
I thought he was going to get away for sure.
I was kind of thinking they might.
I thought he was going to get away, and nope, he gets a butt to the face.
That shit.
Which
is
great, because a broken jaw is going to be a lot more costly than methadone.
Yeah, really? And that's another one of those scenes, too, where it's a little bit of a stretch of like, dude, a guy who got butted in the face with the back of a gun isn't just like hunky-dory in the next 2 seconds.
Right.
He's probably a little dazed and dizzy, at least.
Sleep.
Johnny sleeps.
He's sleeps. So then let's talk about Liza going out there with Exner in that discussion. Take me through this.
I, for one, actually really like, I really hope they don't waste this potential. The potential character interactions between Nick's new father's ex-wife, like that is the most out of nowhere bizarre character mix up there could possibly be, and they're gonna really rely and depend on each other in this coming situation at the hospital, I think that's a really, really interesting dynamic, and I hope they don't waste the potential that's there. But that's it's an interesting scene. It shows how wide of a moral compass, I guess you would say, that Liza has, in the sense that this doctor who she just met 7 hours ago, who was like, hey, we really need you at this place. Your family, your friends here, they'll be fine. You know, who knows how much she can really guarantee that. I see what she's saying in the sense that, hey, they are covered by a ton of military with guns. But yeah, just that one glib, quick reassurance of, hey, your family's safe, they're fine, we really need you, was enough to convince her, which really either she's naive, or she really has the sense of, I can do good and I should, I'm morally obliged to do good.
So I feel two ways about this.
Yeah.
One, I don't know. I'm not a mother. I don't have breasts.
Me sucky sucky.
Okay.
But you can still do that.
I can still do that.
Mouth to mouth.
Is that what you say when you vacation in Thailand?
All the time. I just close my eyes, I'll mouth some out.
Give me some of that rattlesnake blood and a lady Jesus. Boy. God. Oh, Matthew.
Me so funny.
I know you are, Matt. But listen.
All right.
I'm not a parent. I'm not a mom. I'm not a dad. But... And it's unfortunate that none of the moms and dads weighed in on this. Can you imagine getting in that truck and leaving your son behind?
That's tough. It's really, I mean, leaving him to his father. So there's that aspect as well. You know, now, she's not just leaving him on his own.
There's another thing too. Some parents suck. Okay. Just going to throw it right out there. Sorry.
That is true.
Not our Absolutely. Listeners, but some parents suck. They're not good at parenting. They might see this as some kind of weird redemption. They might be like, oh, he's fine with dad. I need this moral redemption for my failed lack of nursing career that I should have had.
Yeah, I see your point. Right? No, that is a really good point.
So either she's either, you know, maybe that's the case.
Yeah.
You know, and that might be kind of a cutting a wide swath of, you know, oh, she's a bad parent. You know, that goes back to the whole evil thing. You know, there's actions, there's good and bad actions. There's favorable and unfavorable actions that people have in their lives, you know? It's like if you get into an argument with your spouse, your girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever the fuck, and you're like, you're an asshole. Not a good move, right? Because it's almost like you're indicting them as a person. It might be better to say, that thing you did sucked. You were a fucking idiot on that thing you did. Judge the action, right?
Yes.
So I don't want to say she's a shit mother for getting in the back of that thing.
And I don't think
definitely
she is.
Adds some depth to her. Definitely makes her a lot more complicated and kind of interesting, to be honest with you.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. I think it's a really interesting, you know, setup they're making here with what she's gonna have to do. And there's a part of me that thinks that even in the back of her mind, she was already seeing Nick get hauled away and like, fuck, like, there's gonna be no one else there who can help him or stand up for him or say anything for him. And maybe, even though it's funny, you know, at the end of this episode, it's very much Madison being like, fuck your ex-wife, this is her fault, she did this. But for all we know, she only went with him to say, maybe I'm the person who can help get Nick out of this.
Absolutely. There could have been that too, and that's a great observation. She could be like, well, they're going to let me go, and I kind of got Nick into this, and I feel guilty, and maybe I can spring Nick.
Yeah. As far as she knows, she's a free agent in this, that they need her help, and she's free to you know, go if she wants to. Because she didn't say, get on the fucking Jeep, we have a gun at you, and we need your help. She's saying, come on, we really do need your help, please. She could have still said, nah, I don't want
to. I do like that Dr. Exner was a more gentle approach. Right, for sure.
She actually offered a choice.
It wasn't like a fucking white coat and she's like, get on the truck, and the fucking stormtroopers grab her and throw her on the truck and, you know, shoot a couple of citizens and their dogs as they drive by kind of shit.
Burn,
you know,
Luke's parents.
Oh, shit, that's good stuff. And anyway, so Madison, of course, blames Liza for the whole shebang before she decides to ride off into the sunset. But, let's talk a little bit about this.
If you find this, I love you. I saw something today, something that horrified me. At first, I thought it was unnatural. I thought it was an aberration. But I was wrong. What I saw was prophesized. What I saw was godly. And I think it's overdue. I wish you were here, but I will see you soon. You hold me.
There you have it.
I'm gonna just flat out say it. I unequivocally love this last scene. The music, where every character is, where Madison's drinking alone, where Travis goes up on the roof, where Alicia's reading the note, all of it. And especially, you know, our very last shot of seeing that signal again and troops going in there and wasting them. Heavy fucking end. And I like it. I really do like the ending. This is my favorite ending of any of the episodes so far.
I concur. I think the last few minutes of this episode are solid.
Stellar. Yeah. I really like them.
You know, I don't think it's unrealistic for these guys to show up, for there to be a scuffle and all that shit, you know? I was crucifying the show for its depiction of Moyes, who I think would have had a different approach realistically, but I don't think that this kind of clash is unrealistic. When you start saying, you're coming with us, you start splitting up families, there's going to be a fucking clash.
For sure.
That's that, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, man, it's pretty interesting the way things kind of ended off here. For sure, Miss Tran believes in evil because she's talking some apocalyptic shit. Like Bible, you know, fucking the rapture shit she's talking, right?
Yeah, and that's what she said. You know, I guess we caught a quick glimpse of it in the last episode of, you know, an empty pill bottle on the table. And in that episode, it's kind of confusing because you're like, well, maybe Nick rifled through that real quick before
anybody
else noticed.
I thought that too.
That's what I thought, but I'm thinking from what we learned in this episode that that's what Miss Tran killed herself with.
Yep, Jessica pointed that out halfway through the app, and she's like, what do you mean you didn't notice that? I'm like, go fuck yourself.
Boom, Jessica's so fucking smart. Dean's so fucking dumb.
That was that. So that's the episode, dude.
Yeah.
All right, let's get over to our listener comments. What do you think?
Let's.
And why don't you kick things off, my brother?
Sexy. I will start with Jamie Lomas. I don't understand why Madison went outside. She didn't go to the flashy lighthouse. I can only think that it's setting up an invasion by walkers through the hole she cut, but it's not very organic. Other than that, I enjoyed this episode. Super duper glad that Jamie pointed that out. That, especially not only when she cut the fence and she left the damn cutters behind, I'm like, shit, that is going to be what compromises this situation. 100%. For sure.
They are going to pour through that shit like fucking World War Z, except way slower.
Yeah. And that's one thing that we didn't really talk about, which it is inevitable. And I'm not sure, maybe it won't happen in the first season. I think it still will. But this situation, this safe zone must come to an end. The narrative demands that it must, because we know that, you know, the apocalypse will overrun it. Either it's overrun and destroyed and the characters, you know, run out because it's being overrun, either the troops abandon, or either everyone, or they either they escape the situation. That's like, it can only go three ways.
Yep.
And with the only setup we have pointing us in any particular direction is what Jamie said, with the fucking hole being cut in the fence.
I like your style, which leads us to Brian Campbell's comment, because you were talking about this isn't going to last. And he says, I like the Trainspotting throwback, but it feels as if we're missing the epic battle that we would have expected with the Zed outbreak in L.A. Rick had his coma. These guys have their military safe zone. Seems like both missed the major action. So he's concerned that we're going to miss the fallout of society like we did in the original show. Isn't that the point of this show? I'm kind of interpreting this how I will. But
yeah.
but that's what I'm thinking reading his comment, and he's got a point there, right?
Yeah.
We saw a couple riots, and then everything was cool. Are we going to see the mass chaos? I mean, is that a budgeting concern? What do you think is going to happen? Are you just going to see this dealing with our group in an intimate portrayal of that?
Well, I mean, we have that, like, that. Speaking of World War Z, that's a perfect example of we had such a tight focus where I really wanted a broader focus and I wanted to see what was happening in the wider world. And I hope this show doesn't make the same mistake. And I hope, like what Brian's saying, I hope the situation in the safe zone comes to an end pretty quickly within this first season, within this first six episodes, so that we can see our characters traveling through the wider world experiencing the downfall. That Indeed. Is definitely what I want to see, and that's what I hope they go with, because I could see them, for you know, the practical meta concerns of a budget and a production sense, staying within enclosed walls so that, you know, we can only, but God, think about how bad of a choice it would be for both of your Walking Dead shows to be set within walls at this point. Like, that's pretty
bad.
We, you know, this is almost their opportunity to have one show that's moving and one show that's stationary. They should go ahead and do that.
Next week, all hell's going to break loose, because you got two episodes left, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And you don't want to repeat the same things you have in the other seasons. And I think they're being very cognizant of that.
For sure.
Who do you got?
I have Mr. Bucket.
Mr. Bucket.
And he says, Liza's ethical quandary
moment.
Wait
a second.
Oh.
You think Mr. Bucket knows Jason Statham?
Jason Statham transporter.
Transporter.
Refueled.
So, I'm sorry, continue.
Jesus. All right.
My name says, they call me Turkish. And that's my friend, Tommy.
Oh, fuck.
I'm done. Go.
All right. You
watch
are done.
Snatch. Everybody watch the movie Snatch. Trust me. You will not be disappointed. And not the one you search for on Pornhub, you fucking...
Oh,
you
yikes.
Filthy animals.
Disgusting. All
do,
of you.
Who
we
would
never
do that?
We would never play something disgusting like that. Not like the sound clips we've been playing.
Yes, this is a classy operation. I'm sorry. Get back to Mr. Bucket before I kick you in your fucking neck.
Liza's ethical quandary moment before deciding to go help at the hospital, and the dread feeling that hit me when Travis saw the gunfire at the source of the light signals from the roof of enlightenment. Ooh, those are I would agree that those are some of the best, like, emotional moments of the show.
Yeah, that Liza's thing is awesome. I'm really happy with her this episode and what they did with her. I don't know if I like her yet, but I like the time she's getting.
Yeah. They have something interesting that will happen with her, for sure.
Tracy Hobson, who I believe is in the Army, right? Didn't we determine that from her other comments? She said, not liking the National Guard people right about now. Secrets and experimental shit going on in the quote-unquote hospital. That is down the road. Notice at the end when the dad is on the roof and he sees the flashlight, but right after those were muzzle flashes. So bye-bye mystery light flasher. Yeah, she noticed that too. Yeah, I like her take on the secret hospital. Absolutely. What the fuck is this hospital, man?
Yeah.
What's going on in this goddamn hospital? Bunch of walkers chained to the wall?
Makes me wonder if that's the hospital they passed by and the military has since reclaimed it. I don't know.
Ah, I like your style, kid.
Got to be some kind of facility. Something.
That's another crazy thing that happened in Katrina, like mass looting of hospitals. Like it was madness, dude.
Katrina was bad.
It was so fucking bad. It was fucking crazy. Once upon a time, I worked for a water company in a call center, and we were getting calls from people who really, really wealthy people. And it was right at the tail end of that storm. That's right when I joined there. And they were like, I want to buy a trailer truck of water and send it to people. Like, it was crazy. Damn. People buying shit for people they didn't know to get them fucking bottled water, you know? It was cool. It was a cool display of humanity, man. It was really interesting.
That's really interesting, yeah.
Sorry, shit. Continue. Oh, is it me? Is it me?
Wait.
Is it me? It's me. Karen Lomas.
Oh, well, you just did Tracy Hobson.
Oh, shit. Look at me.
Look at you hogging the fucking mic over here.
You sneaky bastard, you. All right, go ahead.
Well, we can't skip this one because it is Damaris OG Perez, day one. Damaris day one.
Awesome. Day perfect. One. Damaris day one.
And also, the other name that Damaris and her sister Maria have given themselves, that's what I say, before these words come out of my mouth, I have to make sure the world knows that they gave themselves these names, fan hags.
Oh, is that a fact?
Me so funny.
Shit. Damaris fan hag says, last week he says to Madison, you know how I feel about guns, or something like that. This week we get a nice glimpse of his manly tribal tattoos on his abs. Was he some sort of badass in his past life? And if so, when will he man the fuck up?
Indeed.
Interesting. I kind of mentioned that last time. I wonder if Travis's, you know, reluctance about guns doesn't come from not knowing anything about them, but from having some bad experiences.
Yep.
As a gang member, as a fighter, as
somebody. We did talk about that last week, and I think that's a good point.
Yeah.
I didn't spot these tattoos at all.
They are there. That is true. Yeah. They poke up from the waistline of his pants, all sexy like.
Damn. Just saying, you want to know what's at the end of this tattoo, don't you?
Me love you long time.
All right. Karen Lomas says, necessity is the mother of invention. Indeed. How creative Nick was to be stealing other people's morphine. God, I love this character, even when I hate him. All the time I'm thinking, this guy is too calm to be going cold turkey. The opening shot of him sunbathing in the pool was priceless. Yeah. That was such a tone setter for this episode, wasn't it?
It was good. And Karen fucking eagle eye. Like I was saying, I had the wool pulled over my eyes by Nick. I was like, oh, maybe he really is kicking it. She knew that was bullshit.
She did.
Nails it.
Who do you got?
I've got from Reddit, TK421. Tonto got his ass whooped by Mama for snatching a sick man's dope, then gets snatched by the soldiers.
Dude, that first sentence is so good. Tonto got his ass whooped by Mama for snatching a sick man's dope.
Totally, and again,
that's fucking poetry. It's such a good sentence.
And it 100% vindicates Madison for that ass whooping. Like 100% deserves that shit.
Yes, 100%.
Beautiful.
Burt Booker, who I posted a bunch of cool pictures that he sent me, because I'm going to tell you guys this right now. I suck at Facebook personal messages. When I get PMs on Facebook, I never fucking know I do. And then I go in one day and I'm like, oh, three listeners emailed me fucking 4 weeks and they probably think I'm giving them the fucking hi-hat because I didn't answer.
I am trying to pick up that slack replying.
Yeah. Sorry guys. I honestly, not a great way to get a hold of me. Email is better than a Facebook message because they're easily scanned by when you're going about just flipping through your phone and shit, you know? Anyway, I'm sorry about that book, Bert. So Bert says, I had a lot of issues with this episode. Captain Asshole, super fine Dr. Frankenstein, dead people all over outside of the fence, and not one zombie. Nick's abduction and Travis stuck in retard mode. I could have skipped this episode. Just got to say as well, only two more episodes. Escape from LA is not going to happen this season.
Interesting. Well, for one, I have to disagree a little bit. I did enjoy this episode. I liked some of the elements it set out and some of the possibilities, especially what we were talking about with Liza. But I do think it's a really interesting prediction, the idea that we are not even maybe even getting out of this safe zone. Like, we're still going to be in the same place by season two. I wonder. That.
We do agree with Captain Asshole for sure. Not even a captain if you're counting, but yeah.
Yeah, just a fucking dickweed, just barely above Sergeant Asswipe.
Actually, no. Yeah, I mean, he's an officer, right?
I think so, but God, I would hope.
Oh, he's a lieutenant, which means he's an officer. So you got, and here's something I do know a little bit about, and Josh, correct me if I'm wrong, but you got your enlisted personnel, and then you've got your officers, and officers are all...
Well, and you've got your NCOs, non-commissioned officers, which are sergeants, but are beneath lieutenants, officers.
Right, you like Josh explained to me once. You can have a sergeant in the Marine Corps for fucking 30 years.
Yeah,
and he still answers to. And this is something Josh experienced. He was in OCS because he had a degree. He went to OCS, which is Officer Candidate School. And when he graduated, he was a lieutenant. I think second lieutenant. I don't know if it's second or first. I always mix it up if they count backwards or forwards. But anyway, he was a lieutenant, and he immediately outranked the guy with 35 years of experience.
Ooh.
So
get that salty motherfucker all up in your ass.
So pretty cool, pretty crazy dynamic that's how it works, right? I know that lieutenant is before captain. The lieutenant is the first of the, because that's Josh. He came out a lieutenant, so that's it. And that's one of the things somebody else said. 2K421 was like, why? I think it was him. He's like, why is this lieutenant like 45 years old? Like, he'd be a lot younger, you know? Maybe that's how bad of an officer he is. I don't know.
It took him that long to reach it. Yeah. Jesus.
I don't know. Yeah, he's been demoted many, many times. So we're going to send him to this crisis, this domestic crisis. It still doesn't make any sense. It still doesn't make any sense.
He'll handle it.
Yeah. So, Burt Booker. And who do you got?
I have last one, Wade. Wade 4147. So from Reddit. He said, the group being split up both physically and emotionally is interesting. Wanting to see this new hospital setting makes me most excited for next week. I totally agree.
I like definitely the group being split up both physically and emotionally, and that's why I picked this comment, because I think that matters. It's not just a physical split. There's a lot of high emotions riding right now, and you have internal conflict in the group, which makes the show more interesting.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. Everything that had even started to settle in that 9-day period that we didn't see has been completely uprooted in this episode.
Yep.
By the end of it, which, you know, is a good place for drama and conflict. You've got a good setup.
All right, my man. Final thoughts.
I like it, man. Again, the overall trajectory, the arc of this show so far, I'm enjoying. I have my nitpicky points with characters, the fucking military so far. You know, this Moyers guy is completely obnoxious. And it's not like, oh, he's an asshole, he's a dick. No, I hate that he's even a character in this. It's a poorly written character. It is not good. It's a bit of a drag on this episode, especially. But on the whole, I think there's enough interesting stuff going on with our already introduced characters in this episode and being set up for future episodes that it carries the weight of the slow points for me.
I echo your sentiments about the Moyes character. I think he doesn't. I think he's just silly. He's a character.
Yeah,
he's garbage. A caricature, and he's just stupid, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So
pretty much.
That's how I feel about it. And I've already talked at length about how. But that does not mean that I don't think that people in these positions are not capable of doing bad shit to these civilians. So I do want to balance that opinion against that other side of how I feel as well. You just got to write it in a way that makes me believe it. Right?
For sure. Not stupidly, cockily bad. I'm going to knock golf balls into the fucking mailbox.
Right. Don't make it comic book bullshit. Like, give me a reason to be like, oh, that's fucking nasty. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to.
For sure.
Trust me. I think that would be cooler.
It was
kind of distracting this episode. I didn't think much happened. I mean, I feel like I needed more Nick this episode. It was kind of a Liza episode, right?
I would say I was surprised at how, especially even last episode, how little Nick was in that one and in this one as a relevant character.
Yeah, I think I needed more Nick for sure.
Yeah, we get a little more emotional depth with, you know, with him and his mom and stuff. But as far as, you know, things he's doing, not much.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I don't. I think. I think it's probably my least favorite episode so far, to be honest with you.
Really?
Yeah, oh, I think okay. I like the other ones more than this one. I think it was almost a downturn because maybe that's because I didn't get enough Nick. I'm not saying I don't like Liza's direction. I think that's an interesting dynamic they've thrown in there, and it's piqued my interests.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I still dig the show. I'm still curious as to how it's going to go and how they're going to end this 6-episode run on. I'm really curious as to what they're going to do. I have really no predictions other than next week, this little cute safe zone ain't going to be hanging around much longer.
Yeah.
Unless the fall of that is the conclusion of the 6-episode run. And then I'm like, well, what are they going to do next week? You know, is next week really going to be just a focus on the characters in the hospital? Because this is a Walking Dead thing. Are we going to take a whole episode, focus on the characters in the hospital, and only get like 2 quick look-ins on Madison and company while Liza and Nick escape, and then the end is the fall of the safe zone? That's very possible.
I don't think, not that they wouldn't do it, but I don't think this particular show in this particular season of it can afford to do that yet. It would have to be a very evenly split episode, I think. I think we're going to have, you know, and I would say this, I don't think they can even afford to introduce a lot of characters in the hospital. We're going to get what Liza and Nick are doing in that hospital and then what's going on back at the house. And that's it.
I think you can get some creepy shit, though. I think you can get stuff with this.
Imagery and story, for
sure. I have
a
feeling Exner doesn't make it out of that hospital.
Not going to be, I wouldn't say it's going to be a slab town. You know, it's not going to be, we have this new doctor character and cops and blah, blah, blah. Like, nah, we're not going to introduce whole new arcs in this hospital environment.
I don't think they can afford to do it, and let me clarify, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying maybe they spend time going here, realizing what's happening, getting some more information, and then things get ugly and hairy there and they got to get the fuck out of there, and they get back so they can tell Madison and everybody what's going on so they can learn a little bit more about the walkers and blah 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 blah, and the next episode everything goes to shit. I don't know, I guess we'll see.
Yeah, we will see. And I think I disagree a little bit in the sense of, I think the 3rd episode has been the best so far. And I think a lot of people would agree to that. It's been, you know, the biggest piece of action. We get Daniel, you know, acting. We get a lot of really cool stuff going on. But I think this episode for me is right up next to that one. I think it's my next favorite episode, actually. Because I was, relatively speaking now at this point, kind of disappointed with the 1st episode. I thought it was very slow. And you know, a decent setup, but still very, very slow, and I wanted more to happen. Where we're at now, I think there is enough good setup going on where I'm so excited about what's to come that I'm still okay even with the crappier parts that have already happened.
I like it. All right, my man. I agree. I think the 3rd episode's the best too. But I'm not sure if I think I still like 1 better than this one. But man, good shit. I am also, oddly enough, even though I think it was a downturn for me, I'm still, like you said, excited about what happened. So I'm curious to see where it goes.
There we go.
Well then, until next time.
Yes.
All right. We will catch you on the flip side, guys.
Me sucky sucky.
Thank you very much for tuning into another episode of Fear the Walking Dead. If you are interested in our other shows, please head over to libertystreetgeek.net. where you will find all kinds of podcasts. Game of Thrones, True Detective, science fiction, film, and more. Definitely subscribe to our other shows if you like this one, and we will catch you on the flip side. Have a great day!